Hi everyone, Gary Wagnon here at 800 Biz Ninja Marketing and the Ninja Marketing Dojo. Today I have a special guest in my studio and we're going to talk about business law, what businesses need to know, and some ideas. And so my guest today is Todd Jarvis. Todd is the managing attorney at Strategic Legal Works. He specializes in business law and real estate law.
Thank you, Gary. No, I'm happy to be here and excited to be here.
Cool. Great. Glad to have you in my office. So tell me a little bit about your business. Give me a little bit about the history of your business and you. Tell me what we need to know.
No, that's great. I'm happy to do that. I guess a little bit of background on me professionally. Before I went to law school and became an attorney, I worked in the software and tech industry. This leads up to a little bit of why I chose business law to get into and kind of why that became a passion of mine. In the software industry, I was there for about 10 years at a fairly large Fortune 500 tech company. I found myself quite regularly being put in charge of developing new departments, trying out new tactics and processes, and kind of building things and starting things. And that's where I kind of found that I had a passion for entrepreneurship. As I was in, I was also doing my undergrad at the time. Background there is I did my undergrad at Brigham Young University in bioinformatics. It's kind of the marriage of computer science, computer engineering, and molecular biology. So I have a really strong tech background. With that, I found that, if I went to law school and became an attorney that worked with businesses, I could help and partner with many businesses and help them grow and be kind of get that entrepreneurial feel and that excitement by working with my clients. After undergrad, I came down here from Utah to the U of A, went to law school here. I spent a couple of years there. I think it was 3 years in law school. Great fun. I also, concurrently with my law degree, I did a genetics master's degree. Worked kind of both sides of the brain there a little bit, but I got both those done in the 3 years. And from there, I moved on and got hired on with a local firm here in Tucson and learned a lot, grew with them, worked with some really great people there. They helped me learn a lot, kind of coached me and mentored me, learn about business, learn about real estate, estate planning, all those areas I have a passion for. And I was able to work with many great clients. I worked with them for about 6 years until I started my own firm, Strategic Legal Works. Started that last October, so October 2018. So I've been at it for, 10, 11 months now, and loving every minute of it. So again, get to run my own business and kind of do law the way I want to do it. I'm taking all the great things I learned from the firm that I was at for 6 years and moving forward into what I think is the future of the legal industry, and also helping some awesome businesses here in the Tucson area and regionally in neighboring states in Mexico. So it's a little bit about me and my background, where I came from, and why I'm here.
Cool. We've known each other for several years, and so I know your passion for helping businesses, and that's one of the reasons I invited you to be a guest, because similar, my passion is the same. Is, I love working with small businesses. There's so much that they need to know. Thanks for coming in. So tell me a little bit about what makes you different. What do you do different than most?
What makes me different is a few things. As I've been working in the legal industry, I've seen a lot of things, experienced a lot of things with my clients. Like I said, I wanted to be kind of a partner, right, with these clients, with these businesses, to help them kind of be part of their growth, about whether they're starting up or whether they're reorganizing and trying to get formed because they maybe skipped a few steps early on and they're trying to get organized now, or whether they're trying to exit their business and sell or pass it on to their heirs. I wanted to be part of that process, and I found that sometimes I wasn't able to be. I think the legal industry, I think lawyers have kind of commoditized themselves a bit. I think it goes back to a little bit about kind of trying to compete with some of the online services. But, I think that a lot of business owners have come to the point of viewing an attorney as kind of a pile of documents, right? Hey, I'm hiring an employee, so I need an employment agreement. Go find an attorney. Say, hey, I need an employment agreement for this person. I'm going to pay him $15 an hour. These are their job responsibilities. The attorney's okay. This is my hourly rate. Draft up the employment agreement, hand it over, and relationship ends. That's not really partnering with the business owner. That's not developing an understanding of their business. Where have they been? Where are they going? What's their hopes and dreams for their business? You know, to draft documents in a vacuum, I guess, is one way to say it. I don't think that's the best way to serve clients, but I think that's just the state of the legal industry right now, and I think that kind of needs to change. So some things I've done to change that is, and to help my clients understand that I don't want to just be a pile of documents for them, and that those agreements, or maybe we set up a business entity for them. They've been working in a sole proprietorship. They come to me and say, hey, I need an LLC. Well, let's dig in and see, is the LLC right for them? What are they trying to get to? What are they trying to accomplish? Where are they at with clients? How do they interact with clients? What kind of team are they building? And then we kind of we use agreements. We use contracts. We use the business entity. Those are the tools that we put in place to get them to where they're trying to go. So it's a lot more outcome oriented. When I quote somebody after I've met with them and say, okay, this is the outcome we're looking for. We want to get you to the point to where, if it's a startup, a lot of times that outcome is, hey, let's get to the point to where you're ready to engage clients. So that's what they're hiring me for. They're hiring me to help them get to the point that they can engage clients. With that, we counsel, I advise them, we put in place the tools that are appropriate for their industry and their business and their goals that will help them get there. Maybe there's employment agreements in there. Maybe it's an S-corp we set up, corporation. Maybe we're setting up a nonprofit corporation. Maybe, you know, maybe we're forming the entity here in Arizona, or maybe we're setting it up in Delaware because of their goals and kind of where they're going. So I guess a little different is I want to be that trusted advisor. I want to put the counselor back in counselor at law. I want them to come to me with their questions so that we can move forward that way and help them scope out an outcome and get them there. And then beyond, right? And then we kind of, well, what's the next goal? Where do we need to get to next?
I love the counselor aspect, putting counselor back in the counselor at law, because that's really what a good business person should be. In my case, again, similar situation. I try to be a trusted advisor, and it's hard to do that when you're just trying to run through and, okay, here's your website, here's your documents, here's your agreement, go on, because I got somebody else waiting in the outside. You mentioned the do-it-yourself type of approach nowadays, where, you know, everything in the internet society now is do-it-yourself. If you need to know how to change the belt on your car, you can Google it. If you need to do a website, you can go to one of the do-it-yourself sites and do it quick and easy. If you need documents, you can go to one of the legal sites that name sort of zooms to mind. What's your advice for people when they're thinking about using something like an online service? You know, how do you address that, advising them what the best option is?
Fantastic question, because that's huge. I think that really is, kind of as I alluded to before, that is really kind of driving, I think, a lot of attorneys feel that pressure to compete with the Zooms and Rockets and stuff online. And really, when it comes down to it, my advice is, what is the purpose that they're going for that document? Why are they engaging with those online services? And most of the time, it's to save money, or the perception of saving money. So understanding scope, let me talk a little bit about this. Something else that kind of makes me feel a little bit different, kind of how I approach my engagement with my business clients. Normally, when someone calls me up and ask me, hey, I need to start a business, I need an LLC formed, or maybe they're in the midst of business and they're like, hey, I need this non-disclosure agreement. What I'll do is I'll kind of describe to them, say, hey, all right, that's good. Those are the right steps. Sounds like you want to do this correctly. So let's go ahead and let's take the time to really know each other. I don't really do initial consultations. I don't do meet and greets, right? We don't sit down and say, hey, and get to know each other. If it's a startup business, I'll schedule with them what I call a Lyft startup session. If they're an ongoing business, I'll set up what I call a Lyft business Lyft audit. And then I'll tell a little bit about what Lyft means, I guess, first. So Lyft is an acronym I use. And basically what I'm trying to get at in this meeting is I want to help them visualize what a sure foundation for their business would look like. I want to visit their legal foundation, you know, entities, business agreements, agreements with their vendors, things like that. I want to visit their insurance foundation, you know, what kind of insurance do they have in place, both personally and and professionally in their business. I want to find out financially, what's their financial foundation look like? How are they funding their business? How are they also, how are they engaging clients? How are they, how is the business receiving income and obtaining income? Also, the T in Lyft is the tax foundation. Let's make sure we got the right tax plans in place. Prior to the meeting, I send them a packet and I encourage them to fill out that packet. Now, the reason why I do this is because I want to be able to counsel them in the scope of where they're going. This meeting we're going to have, this first initial meeting we're going to have, they're going to walk away knowing their next steps. They're going to have answers to their questions. They're going to not just get to know me and see whether they want to hire me or not. They're going to kind of know what the next, what we're going to find issues in their foundations, right? And they're going to know what kind of holes they need to plug or how to put those sure foundations in place. That comes down to, I guess, someone who doesn't want that involvement, doesn't want that, they just want the agreement, and then go to LegalZoom, go to Rocket Lawyer. You can get an agreement. It won't be drafted in the full scope of your business. It'll be done in a vacuum. It probably might be cheaper, might not be cheaper than it would have been to have me do it or another attorney do it. But really what it comes down to is I'm not being paid for a document drafting. I'm not, you know, drafting a document. What they're hiring me for ultimately is to be their partner in shoring up the foundation of their business and having clear set next steps that's going to help them to achieve whatever outcome it is that they currently need to. You know, if they're talking about an NDA, well, they must need an NDA for some purpose. Maybe they're having someone make some prototypes for their next product or something. There's a lot more that is involved there. And if we can have a conversation, I can at least educate them to other things they should be thinking about. So that NDA means something and it helps them achieve the end goal, where a downloaded NDA is not, I mean, it probably be legally sound, but it won't necessarily move them towards their goal.
That's a common, I think, with a lot of businesses, is they think, well, I can grab something quick off of a document site and it'll do me just as well. But with this society, you know, you think a partnership, when you form a partnership or you get into business and you think everything's going to be fine, everybody I'm working with, we have a great synergy, but I'm sure, you know, as you know as well as I do, that can change at any point and there can always be situations. So, you know, having that protection that a business needs is critical, because either at the start, as you wrap up the business, as the business transitions from a partnership or grows, or all the different things that happen. So when you're advising people about protecting their business interests, what should they be thinking about? What should they be looking for from down the roadways?
That's a lot of what attorneys do and what I do. And that's one thing we can definitely offer beyond the scope of a document. Because I always tell people, you know, when they ask, well, what kind of lawyer are you? I'm like, well, I work in primarily business planning and estate planning. And most of my estate planning is just there because I help my business clients with their succession planning and such. When you look at a business and it's starting up a business or they're moving through a business, I say I work in the happy side of law, right? We're not in a fight. People are building things, we're growing things, we're excited about entering this new business and making money and impacting the world, doing good for other people. When we sit down and talk, I by no means am I there to quench that, right? But I see a lot of what my duty is to them as their advisor is to help them address and face the big what-ifs. Identify the big what-ifs. What if one of the partners wants out? What if one of the partners isn't doing what they promised they'd do and you need to push them out? You know, what are you going to do when one of you passes away? You know, what's going to happen when one of your employees sues you for, you know, whatever incident they bring against you? So I kind of see it's my job to foresee and kind of help them understand what those possible what-ifs are, and to put a plan in place so that when it comes up, you've already made the decision. You as partners have already decided if one of you wants to move on with your life outside the business, or if there's a fight and you can't overcome it, you've already made the decision. And that decision is already in writing, and you can just point to the document. Hey, here's our operating agreement. We decided this is how one of us can get out. Let's just follow the steps, move on. So it's making those decisions ahead of time. It's having the right insurance in place. You know, business entities are awesome for limiting your liability, right? I mean, it's in the name of LLC, limited liability company. That's its purpose. That's kind of what it's there for, is to separate your buckets, your personal bucket, your business bucket. Let's keep them separate. Let's put a shield between them so they can't reach into each other, right? Creditors from each other can't reach in and affect the others. What needs to happen there a lot of times is make sure that those buckets stay separate. You know, some advice on how to maintain that. It goes back to, I guess, the LegalZoom thing. You set up an entity with LegalZoom or another one, right? Do it yourself. Maybe just go straight to the Corporation Commission and file. Well, there's steps you need to have in place to maintain that entity. And a lot of times you, through your own actions, you basically make that entity useless, right? You've pierced the veil, as they call it, or allowed it to be pierced. So having an advisor, an attorney, can help you make sure that you are maintaining the entity correctly. Obviously, there's always going to be risk in business. We don't fill all the holes. We just uncover the holes and we decide which ones we're going to navigate, how we're going to navigate them, and then move forward. But I mean, there's always the risk, and that's part of the fun, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody goes into business thinking that they're going to have problems. You know, we go into business because we're passionate about something. We have an idea we think is going to be an awesome idea, an awesome product, an awesome service. We're really good at it, and we don't think we're going to ever have any problems. So having that protection is absolutely important to do, and people don't understand that. Even to the point of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so if I went down and let's say I just formed myself as an LLC, did all the paperwork at the Corporation Commission that I needed to do, but aren't there requirements other than tax filling out the tax form, but aren't there other specific requirements that you have to meet to be to remain an LLC?
Great points and great questions. If you look at, maybe we're talking a little bit about LLCs, corporations, right? Corporations are very structured. There are very specific and detailed steps you need to take to maintain a corporation. And that's why the plus side is that you have great liability protection and great legal support if you maintain your corporation. The LLC is a little more loosey-goosey. The LLC in Arizona doesn't require like an annual report like a corporation does. However, if you talk to any attorney and if you work with me, you'll know that I encourage and almost tell you that it's required. I believe it really is required to make sure you're keeping proper minutes and you're also keeping your finances. You have to keep your finances separate. There are steps you have to take. Otherwise, the LLC will not do any good, especially if it's a single member LLC or just spouses, right? If you're the only owner or member of an LLC, then proving to the court, if you get into an argument and get into a dispute with a creditor, proving to the court that your LLC should be treated as a separate entity from all your personal bucket, right? Your personal belongings, personal assets, your personal life, that there should be separation there. The burden's there. You have to be able to show you're going to be a whole lot better off if you can take company record book to court and demonstrate to the judge, hey, look, I've kept all these minutes. All my finances are separate. I've never commingled finances. Everything, all my money that's gone into the business has either been recorded as a financial investment, purchasing for equity and interest as capital investment, or it has been a loan, and I've paid back the loan at some standard imputed interest rate. You're going to be a whole lot better off. You're going to be able to be a lot more successful in convincing a judge or a jury that this business entity is separate from myself or yourself. Because there's a lot of states, to be honest, there's a movement. Some states don't recognize a single member LLC as a separate entity. You're just a sole proprietorship as far as the law is concerned. Arizona's not there yet, but I still argue the burden's there, and especially with how global and national business is becoming. Yes, you want to make sure you are fulfilling those steps. Otherwise, you may not be have the protection you want. And, you know, we can just sit down and talk and discuss what things you should be doing to make sure that you've took the time to put that LLC together. Let's make sure it does what you hope it to do.
In addition to the structure of the business and you know, the way it's structured or what type of entity to create, what are some other common mistakes that business people make that you see that that you would like to have them understand better?
The role of contracts and agreements, a lot of people view them as annoying, right? Like, I just want to do business. Don't let these things get in the way of me engaging a client. But a lot of people are afraid if they present a client with, you know, one page, three page sales agreement or contract for work agreement, that the client's going to be offended or that it's going to discourage them hiring you. I almost argue the opposite here. I think that having a good agreement in place shows your client that you are serious about business and that I think it garners respect from your client. The reason why that is it's because business is all about relationships. I don't know if I've said that yet or not, but I strongly believe business is just about relationships. Relationships with your vendors, relationships with your partners, relationships with your clients, right? And a way to make relationships as strong as possible is to make sure that expectations are set on both sides of the table. Knowing what you can expect from your client, or and also them in turn knowing what they can expect from you, is going to make business go so much smoother. So a contract, one that's drafted reasonably, is going to protect your client as much as it's going to protect you. And it's going to establish that relationship, and it's going to make your relationship more successful. They'll know what you're going to do for them and what they can expect from you, and vice versa. And it just, again, it covers those what ifs. When am I going to build? How much am I going to get billed? When do we know the project's done? Just those subtle expectations that a lot of times people just want to go in and you know, the client's like, hey, yeah, I'll hire you. Let's get this project done. And they give you money and you start working on it. And no one's really exactly clear on, when it comes down to it, when this thing's going to be done and when they have to give you more money, etc., right? And it goes with your vendors. It goes with your partners. You know, it's just, I think having agreements in place, and they don't have to be these big, elaborate 10-page documents. We can put a reasonable agreement in place that will be, you know, protect both parties, and it will make sense to both parties. I mean, avoiding the legalese, right? Having plain English contracts, it's just the way to go. So I think that's, I think that it kind of addresses what I would like to see clients doing, people, businesses doing, that a lot of times they're not, especially smaller businesses. A lot of times we don't know what we don't know, and we're just excited about, hey, people are paying me.
So with that being said, and the common mistakes people make, if you were to give a business owner a checklist of things that they should have, I mean, when you're starting business, what are some of the things that you should have in place before you get really launching, get rolling in your business?
Like I said, when I meet with a client who's starting a business, I do that Lyft startup session, and then I'll present to them. I have kind of three general packages, right, that we tailor to specifically to the current business needs. So I'll just kind of talk a little bit about what tools we'd use to get most businesses ready to engage clients. So things we're going to do is we're going to get in place the correct business entity. You know, are we going in the correct location? Are we doing an Arizona LLC, an Arizona corporation? Are we doing a partnership or limited liability partnership or something, or professional limited liability company? So there's all these different choices. So we're going to discuss, and we might even pull in their CPA, figure out what's the best entity for them and what location, where are we setting this up? So that's one thing we'll put in place. We'll put in place a lot of times, especially with a lot of businesses. I work with a lot of online businesses, so they're kind of working on a national level, or I have a lot of businesses who want to go beyond their scope. So we'll go through and we'll counsel and we'll get the proper entity in place. Another thing we'll do is we're going to look at, like I said, a lot of with the scope of business being fairly national. One thing that you put a lot of effort and time and money into your business, So protecting it is important. Protecting, as you start businesses, you may not realize that you're creating assets, you're creating intellectual property assets. One thing as an IP attorney with my technical background, I can really help my clients with specific intellectual property protections. One of those common things that I'll do with clients is we'll look at their name. We'll help them select a name because there's more to a name than just something you think is fun and neat, right? We'll search the name out. We'll make sure that it's trademarkable, and I'll encourage my clients, and most times I'll include in my fees the registration, federal registration of their name, and that will give them put the whole nation on notice that someone in whatever the particular industry is using this trademark, this name, so no one else can use it, and they can stop everybody else from using it in their industry. Different things going into that analysis of how strong is the name as far as how enforceable is a trademark going to be, trademark claim going to be. So we counsel with them, I help them figure out a name they love and a name that's going to support them before they put all this time and effort into building goodwill around that name. Let's make sure that they can keep that name and it'll serve their purposes down the line. We'll also look at putting in some standard agreements. If they're leasing space, we're going to look at their commercial leasing. We're going to negotiate the commercial lease for them, and we'll get them set up and ready for that. Some other things we'll get in place are if they have maybe an employee they're bringing on, we can put an employment agreement in place, or if they have a partner, we can put an operating agreement in place with their partner. So those are some of the things that we'll address up front.
As business owners, there's no owner's manual that comes with running a business, so we kind of have to operate by the seat of our pants. And I'm sure I made plenty of mistakes when I started my business and still do probably, but having somebody that gives you the advice that understands the whole big picture is important. But I guess one of the reasons that we have that people are hesitant to go contact an attorney to guide them in this particular process is the fact that maybe they're afraid of the cost. So how do you address the issues of cost and for legal services?
That's one of the things that concerned me as well. The firm I worked for, it was a progressive firm, looking at different ways of helping clients afford the services. And so I got some of the ideas from what we were cultivating there. But one thing I've done, I've taken to the extreme in my firm, is I've dropped the billable hour. I don't bill hourly for anything, for any of my services. I found that when I was billing hourly, that was one of the deterrents from my clients to let me be their advisor, right? They didn't want to sit down for an hour and a half, and hash out a strategic plan, right? They were looking, the watch, it was clicking, right? They didn't call me, they wouldn't email me as readily because they were afraid to ask questions. Email is going to cost them $60 or phone call is going to cost them $100. They didn't have a surety of cost. They didn't know, okay, if I hire him to do this agreement or to put this business together for me, in the end, how much is it really going to cost? Yeah, he's asking for X amount up front, but it could always go over that depending on how much time I take. That's why I got rid of that. Anytime I work with someone, like I said, we do a lift startup session. At the end of the session, they'll know what kind of steps they need to take to get their business put together and ready to engage clients. And I will tell them up front, it's going to cost this much money because these are the things we need to put in place. This is the time. And no matter what happens, we're going to get you to this outcome with these tools in place for this amount of money. I'll quote them a price, and that's the fee. And I'll work with them. I'll do whatever phone calls need to be done. We'll meet. We'll talk. We'll pass agreements back and forth, narrow them down, get them to where they want. That is how I've come to address it. Now, I'm not saying it's completely cheap and that it's going to be cheaper than paying someone hourly. Most of the cases it will be. But what I'm saying is, if it's a family I'm working for in an estate plan, or if it's a small business I'm working for that's just starting up, most small business owners, especially startups, don't have a lot of capital to work with, right? I understand that, and that's okay. What they can get and they will have from me is a surety of cost. They know how much they need a budget for us to get this work done, and we'll get it done. We'll get it done, and it'll be a reasonable fee for both of us. And again, they're not paying for the documents. They're paying for the advice. They're paying for the partnership. Someone who's has experience with businesses, someone who can help them, and it's going to help them pass more than just getting those agreements in place. We'll talk about, you know, well, how many clients, you know, we'll talk in their financial foundation. We're going to talk about, you know, how many clients do they need to engage every month to get what they need? What, how much money do they need to survive? How much of the money do they want? Well, what does that mean? How many clients per month do they need to engage at what average fee in order to obtain that? And then what kind of plans can they put in place and things can they put in place to make sure that that happens?
I like that approach. That, in fact, when we started my company in 2000, or actually 99, that's the way we actually structured it. I have never said I work on an hourly basis. Everything I do is by the job. So when I go in, it's the client knows exactly how much the website design is going to be before they ever start. And if it takes me longer, well, if it takes me shorter than I anticipate, okay. But that is a reassuring to know that you have that, that on the front end, they know exactly what to expect. So I think that's I love that approach. You mentioned a little bit about financial planning. What are some mistakes people are making, or what do you wish people knew about creating that financial plan for their life?
We're all a business to make money, right? That's why we're doing it. I know most of us are in an industry that we have a passion about. If we're starting a business, it's because it's something that we care about. We have a message that we want to bring to someone. We have a tool or a good or a service that can better someone's life, right? Make them happier. Maybe it's just, you know, entertainment, which is awesome. Maybe it's something to make them more efficient at their own job. But it's something that can benefit someone, or we believe can benefit someone. But ultimately, we're doing it because we want to make money and be able to support our families or ourselves or loved ones or whatever it is. Money's there. Really getting an understanding of what that means. Really sitting down. Not enough business owners understand their financial situation. One, they don't understand how much they need to survive. How much do they need to keep the business afloat? How much do they need to support whatever, whoever it is they're supporting, whether it's themselves and their hobbies, or it's their family and all of their hobbies? A lot of people don't understand what is it, what is that baseline? What do I need to survive? And then beyond that, what do I need to be of service? So what do I need to be able to be meeting my clients' needs above and beyond my own needs? And then you should really know what is the number that you need in order to have what you want, because that's really what we want, right? We don't want to just survive. We don't want to just be of service. We ultimately want to be in a position where we have what we want. I'm not saying it has to be extravagant, but, you know, we all want to be comfortable. And I believe that a lot of people don't know those numbers. So helping people figure those numbers out really helps them get a vision for their business. From there, we can work backwards. A lot of people get into business, and for instance, my wife and I own a gym, right? A lot of people get into the business of, you know, of the fitness business, and this goes for all industries, really. They're like, well, how much should I charge? Well, let's look. This guy over here is charging this much. This guy's charging this much. This guy's charging this much. Okay, let's just kind of average that, and that's what we should charge because that's what everybody else is charging. But the problem is you don't know if this person struggling? Are they making ends meet? Are they about to go out of business? Or maybe they don't have the financial demands you do. Maybe they are single and living in an apartment, where me, I am married and have 7 kids. You know, I think our needs are going to be a little bit different that way. Doing that can be a mistake. I often tell people when working with clients is you need to find out what these numbers are for yourself. And then looking at what you need to be of service, and what you want. And you want to use those two numbers, the two higher ones, to be of service and the what you want numbers. Find out, in order to meet this number, monthly number of what you need to be of service to your clients, that means all of your stuff at home is being taken care of because you have the time and effort to put into servicing your clients now, right? And you have the money to build the team or whatever it takes to really service your clients. What is that number on a monthly basis? And then from there, how do you break that number down into, hey, I need X amount of clients per month at X amount of average fee. That is the number that you need to start with, and that is how you should determine your fees for your business. That's a really good starting place. That's one of the, I think, the basic things every business owner needs to make sure they're doing. One thing this does too is I've worked with businesses where they've found these numbers and it's just not going to work. And it's better to find that out now in the planning phase, that this business, you either isn't going to work and you find something else, or you need to add some services. So I always tell people, another truth I believe when it comes to finances of a business is you kind of have two places you can be to be competitive. Okay. You're either price-wise, cost-wise, you're either going to be, have your fees down here, you're going to be the cheapest guy, and you're going to bring in the volume, right? Now, if you're at that fee level, you're going to have to make sure you're the lowest, right? Or you're going to be at the top, be the most expensive, and deliver value to the hilt so that you're worth that, okay? Anywhere in between, it's pretty much where businesses go to die, right? You're not going to be able to compete. If you can't compete with the lowest rate, people in here are going to lose business to this guy down here, or they're going to lose business to the guy up here who's offering the value. Those are some things to do. Figure out those numbers. Figure out if it's going to work out, if you're going to be able to get enough clients. Or, and I didn't say, it doesn't mean you can't go into business. It just means maybe you need to find somewhere to add value to where it brings the value up to where you can charge the amount you need to make your ends meet, make those numbers work. And then also working with a bookkeeper and CPA to keep track of your finances. Understand your financial reports. I work a lot with businesses to make sure they understand. They're using their financial reports to project forward, not just look in the rearview mirror. You know, driving, looking in the rearview mirror doesn't work. It doesn't work with your business either. You can't look at, well, what happened in the past. You can't use that to drive forward with. So make sure you know how to use your financial reports and you're looking at them on a weekly basis, at least monthly basis, to project forward what you need to do to get those numbers up to what you decided you needed.
So true. I, in a previous life, traveled for a management consulting company, and I would go out and do an analysis of a business, and I never will forget, I did an analysis of a little manufacturing business in Amarillo, Texas, that made filters for water systems, and it was just basically a rope spun on a spool. And so I spent a day or so poking around and looking at their books and their numbers, and I came up with how much the spool cost and how much the rope cost and how much the time. And so I'm sitting down with the plant manager and the production manager, and I said, okay, so how much, you know, how much rope do you use, how much component? And I quickly added it up, and I said, okay, so how much do you sell this for? And well, they said, well, our competition sells this spool, this filter, for $1.45 a piece, or some number like that. And I said, so what do you sell it for? Well, we have to sell it for that. And I said, but your costs are $1.75. as opposed to $1.40 something, but we can't sell it any lower, but you can't lose money, but we can't sell it. And we argued back and forth for a few minutes, and I finally leaned over the desk and slapped the desk and held my hand out and said, hand me the keys, you're out of business. And the guy stopped for a minute and he thought, and he went, you're right. People don't understand, we got to match competition, but you can't always match the competition. You've got to do what works for you and make so that you're profitable, because you're just doing more at less money and they're not going to help anything else we left out that you would like to add?
I think just go into business knowing that you don't need to do it by yourself. All right. Surround yourself with people who are, you know, in complementary businesses. Get out, network. Also build your team. Get your attorney in place. Get your CPA in place. Get your bookkeeper in place. Get your insurance agent in place. Have them talking, working with each other, working for you to help you be successful. Being in business is awesome, and we're all trying to do our best as business owners. There's going to be rough times. Unfortunately, a lot of consumers out there don't realize that how hard it can be, and that really everybody, all the small business owners I've worked with and met, for the most part, are really just trying to do their best to really serve the community, really serve the people that they work for and work with. And just support each other, support local businesses just like you'd want them to support you. And let's conquer this thing together.
Thanks, Todd. Tell people real quick what's the best way to get in touch with you?
You get a hold of me a couple different ways. You can call me. My number is 520-333-7543. You can email me at todd@strategiclegalworks.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Reach out to me there, and happy to talk, happy to sit down and see what the future holds for you and your business, and see if I can be a part of it.
Thanks, Todd. I appreciate your time coming in. Great information, great resources for businesses to understand what they need to do and how really having an attorney should be an integral part of their team. So thanks again for coming in. Appreciate you taking the time. For 800 Biz Ninja Marketing and the Ninja Marketing Dojo, we're here to help. If you ever need information and training on social media, that's one of the things we love to do. We love speaking opportunities where we can teach groups how to create an effective and efficient digital marketing presence. And our Ninja Marketing Dojo is just rolling out now, and it has tons of information on anything you need to know about the digital marketing side of things, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, or whether it be blogs or videos. All those aspects are there to train you in a community setting. So check out the ninjamarketingdojo.com for more information. And thank you for watching. We will see you on the next video.